Today, you'll notice the Word for Today radio program has been updated following the passing of longtime host Norm McBride. Stepping in as the new host, we're pleased to welcome Kathy Parrish, a much-loved Christian broadcaster and a passionate supporter of the Word for Today. You'll also notice a new theme song, Little Country Church by Love Song, one of Chuck Smith's favorite musical groups. Thank you for your continued support of the legacy of Chuck Smith and the Word for Today.
Church on the edge of town. People coming every day from miles around, for meetings and for Sunday school. And it's very plain to see, it's not the way it used to be.
Welcome to the Word for Today, featuring the Bible teaching ministry of Pastor Chuck Smith, founder of the Calvary Chapel Movement. This radio program is a chapter-by-chapter, verse-by-verse study through the entire Bible. And on today's edition of the Word for Today, Pastor Chuck continues his message, Fall Upon Jesus, as we pick up in Luke chapter 20, verse 18. And now, with today's study, here's Pastor Chuck.
So Peter was here when Jesus was challenged concerning authority. He remembered the answer of Jesus to these men. He remembered this parable that Jesus ended by saying unto them, what does this mean? The stone that was set of naught by the builders, the same has become the chief cornerstone. And so Peter brings it right back to them very forcibly, declaring of Jesus, this is the stone which was set of naught by you builders, but the same has become the chief cornerstone. Now Jesus, declaring concerning that stone, said, whosoever shall fall upon that stone shall be broken, but upon whomsoever that stone shall fall, it will grind him to powder. You have one of two relationships to Jesus Christ. Either that of submitting to him, falling upon the stone, or resisting him, and ultimately being ground to powder. Woe unto him who strives with his maker. Many people are so foolish as to fight against Jesus Christ. Fall upon the stone. Fall upon Jesus Christ. You'll find you'll be broken. Better that you do that than in judgment have him fall upon you and be ground to powder. Now the chief priests and the scribes the same hour sought to lay hands on him, but they feared the people, for they perceived that he had spoken this parable against them. They got the message. They knew that he was referring to them, and so they were actually wanting desperately to arrest him at this point. And yet, because of the popular acclaim of the people, they did not do it. And so they watched him, and they sent forth spies which should feign themselves to be just men, that they might take hold of his words in order that they might deliver him to the powers and authorities of the governor. They're now going to try and trap him so that they can accuse him of sedition or of rebellion against Rome and turn him over to the governor. And so they asked him, saying, Master, we know that you say and teach the truth, and you do not accept the person of any, but you teach the way of God truly. In other words, you're no respecter of man's persons. You are a straight shooter. We know this. We know that you don't bow to man, that you tell the truth, you speak the truth. Therefore, is it lawful for us to give taxes to Caesar or not? If Jesus says, no, it is not lawful for you to give taxes to Caesar, immediately they'll run to the Antonio Fortress, call for the Roman centurion, and have him come down and arrest Jesus for advocating a tax rebellion against Caesar. If Jesus says, yes, it is lawful for you to pay taxes to Caesar, these zealots who would not recognize the power of the Roman government, who hated these taxes that were levied by Rome. And there was a certain tax that was levied upon every man just for the privilege of living. This is the tax they were referring to. It wasn't much of a tax, but it was just to show the Roman authority. And so they felt that they had Jesus cleverly trapped. Either way, he's wrong. And so he said, show me a coin. Show me a penny. And he said, whose image, superscription, does it have on it? And they answered and said, Caesar's. And he said unto them, render therefore unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and unto God the things that are God's. It's got Caesar's image on it, give it to Caesar. But he added, you should be rendering unto God the things that are God's. And they could not take hold of his words before the people, and they marveled at his answer, and they held their peace. And then there came certain to him who were Sadducees, who deny that there is any resurrection, and they asked him, saying, Master, Moses. Now the Sadducees were materialist. They accepted as authority, as authoritative, only the five books of Moses. They rejected the prophets. They would not accept them as a part of the scriptures. Only the five books of Moses did they consider to be divinely inspired. And so if you would get into an argument with them and you would quote from the Psalms or quote from the prophets, they would reject it as not being authoritative. Only the five books of Moses. So they said, Moses wrote unto us, if any man's brother die having a wife, and he die without children, that his brother should take his wife and raise up a seed unto his brother. Now there were therefore seven brothers, and the first took a wife, and he died without children. And the second took her to a wife, and he died childless, and the third, and in like manner the seven also, and they left no children, and they all died. Last of all, the poor woman died too. Therefore, in the resurrection, whose wife of them is she? For all seven had her as their wife. Now, the endeavor was to make the resurrection seem so ridiculous that people say, well, that's stupid, that's foolish, you know, and thoroughly discount the idea of the resurrection. There have been those who have done the same thing today, only in a little different way. They hypothesize that back in the days of the Wild West, when a man was shot in a gun battle, and they went out and just dug a shallow grave and buried his body, that as his body decomposed, we know the body is made up of chemicals and elements, and as the body decomposed, these chemicals just actually went into the soil, became a part of the soil. And the prairie grass, its little roots went down into the soil, and the chemicals of this decomposed body were picked up in the roots of the prairie grass, and of course came up through the root system and into the grass itself, nourishing the grass. And the cows came and ate the prairie grass that has the chemicals of the decomposed body of this man who was shot in the gun battle. And the cows gave their milk that contained a part of the chemicals from the decomposed body, and I drank that milk. And thus those chemicals have become a part of my body now. So that in the resurrection, in what body are these chemicals going to go? Because they've been a part of many bodies. And they've tried to make the idea of the resurrection seem ridiculous by these hypotheses that they have created. Now Jesus said, you err because you do not know the resurrection or the power of God. In the resurrection, there will be no marrying or giving in marriage. But we will be as the angels who neither marry nor are given in marriage. As I understand God's purpose for marriage, it is to establish a beautiful, healthy environment for children to be raised, to be brought into the world. The basic plan for marriage, that we might reproduce, that we might be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth. Now, in heaven, the angels do not reproduce, thus no need for marriage. We will not be reproducing, thus no need for marriage. We will be as the angels are. A lot of questions. Will we know each other then in heaven? Of course we will. We're not going to be more stupid there than we are here. The Bible says we will know even as we are known. Well, what kind of relationships will we have? Deeper, richer than any we could ever experience on the earth. Now, just how in all of these relationships, God has not really gone into details with us. Just told us that we'll be as the angels. Now, there are some poor people that feel, well, if I can't be married, I don't want to go there. Well, the alternative is not so pleasant. And there's nothing that says you're going to be married there either. You say, but what about that milk I'm drinking? I'm not going to have this body in heaven. We know that when the earthly tent, this body, is dissolved, we have a building of God not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. I'm going to get a new body, a building of God not made with hands. So whatever happens to this body, I could care less. Some said, well, what about cremation? They can do what they want. We know that when this earthly tent is dissolved, and if they do it by cremation, it'll be dissolved in 37 minutes. If they let the natural processes go, it'll take a little longer. But I will have moved out and have moved into my new house, the building of God, not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. Jesus said, in my Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you, I'm going to prepare a place for you. You say, oh, but what about the resurrection of our bodies? Well, what about them? Paul the Apostle said, some will say, how are the dead raised and what kind of a body will they have? And he said, don't you realize that God teaches resurrection in nature? For when you plant a seed into the ground, the seed does not come forth into new life until it first of all dies. And then the body, and listen carefully, the body that comes out of the ground is not the body that you planted. I feel sorry for you who are so in love with your body that you want to carry it on into the new kingdom. For the body that comes out of the ground is not the body that you planted, because all you planted was a bare grain, and God gives it a body that pleases him. And if it pleases God, you can be sure it's going to please me. So is the resurrection from the dead, Paul asserts. For we are planted in corruption, we will be raised in incorruption. We are planted in weakness, we'll be raised in power. We are sown in dishonor, we'll be raised in glory. We are planted as a natural body, but we'll be raised as a spiritual body. For there's a natural body and there is a spiritual body, and the glory of the terrestrial differs from the glory of the celestial. And even as we have borne the image of the earth and have been earthy, so shall we bear the image of the heavens. So, the body that comes out is not the body that was planted. All we planted was a bare grain. God gives it a body that pleases him. So I'm really quite interested in that new model and all of the gadgets, the capacities of that new body. Probably just fantastic. As this corruption puts on incorruption and this mortal puts on immortality. For you see, God created this body out of the earth for the earth, of the earth earthy. Designed it for the environmental conditions of the earth. The earth is made up of 79 parts, the atmosphere around the earth, of 79 parts of nitrogen, 20 parts of oxygen, and one part of neon and other gases. Now, when God made my body, he designed it so that it needed this 79-20 ratio in the atmosphere. Operates well under it. If he put more oxygen in, my heart would beat faster and I would die sooner. More nitrogen, I would have the opposite effect. But I'd still die sooner. My heart would go slower. If he put equal parts of nitrogen and oxygen in the atmosphere, we'd all go around like a bunch of laughing maniacs, because that's nitric oxide, which is laughing gas in the dentist chair. So we'd all go around with uncontrollable laughter. So he designed the body for the conditions of the environment of the earth. But to come into the heavenly scene, I need a body that's designed for that environment. And so God has a new body prepared for me, and one day my spirit and soul are going to move out of this body into the new body that God has. And with Paul, I'll say, "O death, where is your sting? O grave, where is your victory? For we have been caused to triumph over them through Jesus Christ." Thanks be unto God who gives us that continual victory through Jesus our Lord. So they did not understand. And so Jesus said, "The children of this world marry." That is, in this age, in this time, they marry and are given in marriage. "But they which shall be accounted worthy to obtain that age or that world and the resurrection from the dead neither marry nor are given in marriage. Neither can they die anymore." My new body is indestructible, eternal in the heavens. The building of God not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. So you better like your new one, because that's where you're going to be. "For they are equal unto the angels and are the children of God, being the children of the resurrection." Oh, wait a minute. You said something, Jesus. These guys don't believe in the resurrection. "Now, that the dead are raised, even Moses showed at the bush." You see, these men, only accepting the first five books of the Old Testament, held a position that there was no resurrection. And though there were many arguments prior to the time of Christ, as others were seeking to prove the resurrection to them, because they only accepted Moses as authoritative, no one had ever offered them from the writings of Moses any proof of the resurrection. So Jesus goes right back to Moses. "Now that the dead are raised, even Moses showed at the bush, when he calleth the Lord the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob." Jacob, at the time that Moses stood before the bush, had been dead for 400 years. Isaac and Abraham even longer. And yet God, when he spoke to Moses out of the bush, said, "I am the Lord. I am the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob." And Jesus adds, "He is not the God of the dead, but of the living." Declaring that 400 years after their recorded deaths, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob were still alive. In another dimension, another sphere, but still alive, because God is the God of the living, not the God of the dead. And the scribes, when they heard that, they said, "Hey, that's all right." They had never been able to argue their case with the Sadducees. But when they heard that argument, they were really pleased with that. That, "Hey, that's all right. You nailed him, you know. You got him." And so they answered Jesus saying, "Master, you have said well. That's good." And after that, they dared not to ask him any more questions. And so he said unto them, "How say they that Christ is David's son?" Now, one of the titles for the Messiah was Son of David. Last week, you remember when we were in Jericho and Jesus was entering the city. There was the blind man who cried out, "Jesus, thou son of David, have mercy on me." Son of David was a messianic title because they were looking for some descendant of David to arise in power and in authority to establish the kingdom and to overthrow the Roman rule. Thou son of David, a common title of the Messiah. So he said unto them, "How is it that you say that the Messiah," and the word Christ is the Greek for the Hebrew Messiah. "So how is it that you say the Messiah is David's son? And David himself said in the book of the Psalms," that is in Psalms 110, "the Lord," that is Yahweh, "said unto my Lord," my Adonai, "sit thou on my right hand till I make thine enemies thy footstool." David therefore called him Lord. How then could he be his son? You are dealing with a culture that is a very strong patriarchal culture. The father rules. No matter how old he is, as long as he's living, he rules over the household. You can be married and have your own grandkids, but if your dad's still alive, he rules. No father would ever call his son Lord. That was a title for the father, for the patriarch of the family. He ruled. So no father would ever say to a son, Lord, using that title. So Jesus said, look, if he's the son of David, how is it that David called him Lord if he's his son? And of course, they had no answer.
We'll return with more of our verse-by-verse Bible study in the book of Luke on our next broadcast as Pastor Chuck continues to teach through the Bible. And we do hope you'll make plans to join us. This message has been provided to you by the generous supporters of the Word for Today. For additional information about how you can support this ministry, please visit us online at thewordfortoday.org, where you can order a physical copy of today's message by mentioning Luke 20. There you'll also find free message downloads from Pastor Chuck, as well as links to our podcast and other resources to help you grow in your Christian walk. For those of you who wish to call, our number is 1-800-272-9673. Our office hours are 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Pacific Time. If you prefer to write, our mailing address is P.O. Box 8000, Costa Mesa, California, 92628. Join us again next time as Pastor Chuck continues his verse-by-verse study through the Bible. That's right here on the next edition of The Word for Today. And now, once again, here's Pastor Chuck.
And now may the Lord be with you, and may the Lord watch over you and keep you. In His love and in His grace, may the Lord cause you to abound in every good work for Jesus Christ. And may the Lord grant to you new dimensions of relationship with Him, that you might become more keenly aware of His presence with you and His power to help you. May God bless you. May you have just a fruitful, blessed week walking with Jesus Christ.
The Word for Today resource, Chuck Smith, Man of Impact, DVD, shows how one man was able to affect an entire generation. Founder of the Calvary Chapel movement and spiritual father to thousands, Chuck Smith has had an impact that reaches across the nation and around the world. In this unique interview conducted by Pastor Greg Laurie, you will glean insights into the man behind the message. Listen to rarely heard stories and memoirs in Chuck's own signature voice about the events that influenced a man who has himself influenced so many. I'm your host, Kathy Parrish. Thanks for listening.
Little country church on the edge of town. People coming every day from miles around, for meetings and for Sunday school.
This program is sponsored by Calvary Chapel of Costa Mesa, California.